We're going to deviate from the agenda just a bit. We're going to skip over and move straight to the report on the boat loading study. This report and possible discussion will be presented by Kent Rendy.
Just going to give the introduction comments, but you probably sitting there saying, why do I need to know this about the mechanics of this? But I think it's the board, the staff, we're getting questions on why are you doing a boat loading study? When you see the results to date, whenever they explain to you that this is a snapshot, and that really in order to have empirical data, you need to run the study for a little bit longer. To where, if we are what we say we are, stewards of the lake, you don't end up with a Louisville or some place that's environmentally not correct. So this is strictly an attempt to create the right numbers. Because somebody's going to sue you in all cases, no matter what you do, or us as an entity. And so this is an attempt to get on the side of the angels with empirical data that says, here's why we're making the decision that we're making. So whenever you go out to eat or whatever you do, and you have a contact with your friends, you'll know the answer.
Can you save me about half this introduction? Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, in front of you each week, we've kind of shared out between a couple of board members just because of the size of the piece of information that you have. There's two different sections there, one on Boston Kingdom and one on Granbury. I would ask you not to get really involved in the detail of that as we go through it. Mr. Tetree will kind of give an oversight as he walks through this, as you come down through each section of that and understanding where he is with the update right now of the studies we've done. We, for your concurrence, contracted with John Tetree, Park Studies Incorporated. He's going to give you a little bit of his background. He's got many years of doing this type of work. I think his credentials speak for themselves. He wants to give you a snapshot of where we are today with the study. It's an interim report. We'll be coming back in April. As you notice with the agenda item, there's a timeline of other meetings, public meetings, and stakeholder meetings yet that will take place prior to John finalizing his report. And he'll be back in the April timeframe to give a final brief out of the report and potential recommendations that he may have as well with that. So with that, John, I'll turn it over to you to go ahead and give the presentation.
Thank you very much. If I could have the first slide, please. Okay, what I'd like to do today is first give you an overview of what I'm going to talk about. I'll start with the purpose of the presentation, the study need. I'll go over some of my qualifications. Why lakes manage lakes and how it is accomplished. I'll give you a little bit about the kind of social and legal context that I see this falling into, and then what a building capacity will provide, and then what it will not. And then finally, I'll talk about the process and methods and share with you the classification maps, and if there's time for questions and answers, we'll follow up with that. I may not use this.
Okay. But you need to talk to the mic because we have to record it too.
And I'll just stand here. Okay, what I want to do first is talk, present the rationale for the study. Now, over the years, I've tried to simplify this process, but I don't want to oversimplify it. So I want to go through the background on the analysis and share with you everything so it's very clear and how it supports the maps that we're recommending. So I'll be explaining the process. I'll be explaining alternatives A and B for each lake, and then finally I'll talk about where we go from here. Okay, in terms of the need, the 2000 TVA Master Plan talked about future development. The Business Task 4 for the Strategic Plan specifically addressed building capacity, and the people from TVA recommended a more detailed building study, and for that reason I was contracted to do it. In terms of my background, I've done over 30 building capacity studies for the Corps, TVA, LCRA, state agencies. I actually did, I think, every lake with LCRA. Travis, Buchanan, Inks, Falls, and LBJ. I briefed their general manager, Mark Rose, and their board, I believe, about 10 years ago in Austin. Okay? I have a master's from Texas A&M. I hope you won't hold that against me. But went there about 20 years ago. My first son was born there in Bryan. I worked for the Army Corps of Engineers for 15 years, doing studies like this all around the country, and for the past 5 years I've been in private practice. I also taught at Colorado State University for 4 years and gave lectures on these kinds of issues. Next. So why do we manage lakes and how is it best accomplished? Well, we want to promote safe and enjoyable experiences while sustaining the resource as good stewards, as was mentioned, to improve the situation in the future, and that should be based on sound professional judgment. And that's done by assembling the best available science and fostering a dialogue. Someone mentioned that between managers and the public. That happens to be a map of Lake Travis. Okay? In terms of context, I mean, let's just step back for a moment here. And this is kind of how I perceive the situation after being through a few workshops and living in Texas. These are generalizations, but there's some truth to them. You know, Americans, you know, in many ways, don't trust their government. Okay, because of a number of things. Texans are very independent thinkers. I think we could all acknowledge that. Locals, you know, do not trust the BRA because of some past experiences. Okay, and then locals living with the lakes feel a sense of ownership. They may own the land and often do not think, perhaps, for the common good of all who visit the lake. So those are just some background issues. I'm sure you're aware of them. You could add some material to that, but it provides context for the situation that we're facing. And then I just want to take another side trip to legal kinds of things. When I taught this in class, there's a doctrine of judicial deference, although it applies more to federal situations. It also applies to local. Essentially, what it says, it's the responsibility of the court not to judge whether a decision is good or bad, right or wrong, but to judge the reasonableness of the decision and how it was made. The court will defer to the agency decision if there is an administrative record. That's the key word, administrative record, that contains evidence that the decision was principled, reasoned, and not impulsive. Okay? Go ahead, please. And I'm sure you've seen these terms, arbitrary and capricious, and they deal with this whole notion of reasonableness. Arbitrary, you know, being made without principle or reason, and capricious, whimsical, or impulsive. Therefore, the administrative record is essential to document the basis for sound professional judgment. And it's incumbent then upon the agency to explain the reasoning behind the analysis. That's why I'm here. It can include comments from other agencies, applicants, contractors, and the public. Okay? So, in terms of what the study will provide, it provides a documented process that is transparent and offers opportunities for the public at several junctures. I was insistent that we put our process on the website, explain to people when they can provide comments, and that we keep that open throughout the process, and we've done that. It provides a guide for the lake based on a compartment map with people's perceptions of their building experiences. It provides direction and insight for evaluating the impact of new developments based on existing building conditions, a snapshot as Mr. Ford alluded to. And finally, it provides a plan for monitoring water use over time to collect information as changes occur in both building and shoreline development. Okay? What it will not provide? It's not a silver bullet for decision making. There really are no easy answers. These are complex issues to deal with. And the study is not a recipe for or against development. Okay? So it shows us a very useful guide and no more than that. In terms of the technical approach that I take with these kinds of studies I've done around the country, I want to mention a few principles. One is that building capacity is really a management framework, not a theory. The key words are quality. We want to provide quality out there. Diversity and objectives are critical. A range of opportunities for people, from high density to low density experiences. There's no simple formula. Place specific information and conditions are important. And I found over time that people want fairness and equity, and managers want defensible criteria for decisions. And so, I don't have a formula, but if I were to come up with one, this is what it would be. It would be a P cubed C squared plus E triangle. And I'll go through that. In terms of the P, principles are important, and I've outlined those. I'll explain a five-step learning diagram that is essentially the process. Partnerships with those who have statutory authority or decision-making responsibility, the 8C cooperatives, is important. The compartment map, based on the criteria that I will share with you and that you have in front of you, is essential. And collaboration with the public at all levels. And finally, to get things done in terms of implementation, this E-triangle of enforcement, education, and engineering gets that accomplished. This is what I've used around the country. These are the five steps. The first step starts with identifying the issues with AC cooperators. The second, we go out and conduct a study. Then we'll conduct a workshop with the agency's cooperators to determine what actions are proposed. We conduct a workshop, and in this case, we're actually doing a series of two workshops. We already completed them for PK and Granbury, but we'll do a second one to be more inclusive and to obtain additional input. And then finally, there'll be a meeting with the agency cooperators who come up with a record of decision. Go ahead, please. In terms of methods, first we'll develop and pre-test a survey. It's about a two-page survey. It takes about 7 minutes to administer. I'll go ahead and just hit the button. There we go. And we develop a random sample. We interview ramp users. And when they finish their boat trip, we interview them in a boat ramp. I use students from Baylor University. And then we mail the survey to both dock owners and marina slip owners. We completed over 900 surveys in total. So it's a very good sample size and adequate for this type of a study. And we also conducted boat counts on the water during typical weekends by putting an enumerator in the boat and a ranger and writing down the exact type of craft and where they were located. Typically, when we do a sample, we look at the days of the week and the weekend days and the holidays. I'll draw numbers out of a hat so that the sample is representative and not biased. And it essentially establishes a rigor for any kind of data collection that would follow. And then in terms of my criteria, if we just look at boating criteria, I have a situation where we'll start at very high. If there are greater than 10 acres available per boat, we consider that high. And then it goes on down to very low, greater than 25 acres per boat. These figures have been developed over the past 20 years and have worked effectively on some 30 lakes that I've studied. We also ask people what kind of places you avoided on the lake or found unsafe, and we put that under conflict, and if it's highest, greater than 12, moderate 6 to 12, and below would be 6%. Again, I've used these and refined them over time, and it's essentially become the industry standard for boating capacity studies. Go ahead, please. This allows me to put together a classification map, which I have next to me and you have in front of you, and I'll just go through those classes in general. Essentially, class 1, which red, you have high density, high conflict, okay? And let's kind of move down then to class 4, we have a situation of low density, low conflict. Then we have a situation 3, which is a bit unusual, where you actually have high density but low conflict. And this is often found in places where there are coves in the lake, where people try to escape the choppiness of the main channel, okay? And then the middle ground, which we kind of call the battleground, is class 2. Here we kind of have moderate conflict and moderate density, okay? And that's where it's not really clear as to whether development can occur, okay? We essentially recommend no new development for areas that are already heavily congested, and no new development especially for areas that are low, so we can maintain diversity on the lake, as I mentioned in some of the principles. And we would likely recommend staying away from areas 3 where there also is high density, even though the conflicts are low. So then the place 4 development as a guide would fall into the class 2 or the green areas on your map and on this criteria chart. Go ahead, please. This allows us then to come up with a matrix to look at the interaction or marriage between use level of density, well, how many boats in the water, and the kind of conflict that's occurring there, okay? So that we can classify each of these compartments on a lake. Go ahead, please. We put this together by, collecting data on the water and then using that to map the kinds of output that you'll see here in the next slide. Go ahead. Here's the output for the avoid, favorite, and unsafe locations with a expanded version for Hell's Gate. You'll notice here there's quite a few unsafe things happening in this area. And if you'll turn to the next slide, please, you'll also notice that same place happened to have accidents reported. So when you do research like this, you'd like to see consistency from independent sources. That is, the accidents report, the accident reports, supports what people are telling us about places that were unsafe and had conflict. Okay? And so it was very telling for us. And speaking with our law enforcement personnel, for example, Mike Cox, he was very gratified to see those things were consistent. Basically, you know, sound science rests on being valid and reliable. Okay? Valid means you're finding information to ring true, especially from different sources. When I taught at university, I would describe it as throwing darts at a dartboard. By hitting the right dartboard, you're doing a job that is valid. Okay? Reliable means if you go out and measure it again, you'll get the same kinds of answers. That means you're hitting the same spot on that dartboard. Okay? So when we say sound science, it should rest on being valid and reliable and also applicable. So we were gratified to see consistency in the data to illustrate its validity. Go ahead, please. So what did we do? In terms of baseline conditions then, we completed analysis for the 2005 data when we collected it, and we're calling that Map A. Map A is essentially the baseline scenario. However, 2005 was a low use year. And we're going to show some data to support that, especially for the PK area. So we included the July 3rd data in a Map B scenario. Okay, we're with me. So we have a Map A scenario that is essentially baseline, as is. And then Map B simply includes that information plus the 25% influence of July 3rd. Okay? Now, the trend data for PK substantiated the need to include this, and I'll share that with you. When we did a dry run of this talk a week ago, your council recommended that we include empirical data that would support the fact that 2005 was a low-use year. We could not substantiate that for Granbury. We think it was low, but I don't have real data to show that, so we're recommending the baseline condition as a map that we forward to you for recommendation. Okay, and I'll go through that. Okay, so to provide an idea then, however, of what things might look like in the future, we increased boat traffic by 20%, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100%, but we kept the conflict information constant. All right, so we just increased that each year to give you an idea. Because simple things, first of all, it was a low year for 2005. Remember that for PK, fishing fell off in 2001, and it hasn't really returned. And so for those reasons, we wanted to share with you almost a projection of what things might be like. So this produced a series of five maps for each lake. Okay? Five of each of those percent changes. And for that reason, we have 20 maps there. I'll actually be sharing with you 10 of those maps based on the recommended map. Go ahead, please. So let's start with map A here for Passing Kingdom. Now, this excludes July 3rd data. Okay, and you can see only one area in red showed up. There were some low use, low conflict areas that showed up in yellow, okay, according to the criteria here. Now, if we move to map B, okay, and this is our recommended map. This, again, includes the July 3rd data. We see some other areas showing up as red and otherwise staying the same, a small color change here from a yellow to an orange. And then I want to explain the basis for that, if you'll go ahead, please. Okay. Passing Kingdom Lake on weekends, we were able to obtain this data from head counts. You can see here, over the years, 2005, definitely made a drop, especially for weekends, 5 years of data. Good. Now, if we average those 5 years, 2001 to 2004, we even see more dramatically how 2005 is different from those previous years. Okay, and if we look at weekend, let's see, did you go past one? Okay, go to the next one then. Yeah, go. Oh, weekday, okay, sure, that's right. We haven't seen this one. And if you look at weekdays, we see a similar pattern. For some reason, 2001 was very low, and for that reason, I averaged that again. Go ahead next. And you see when we average again those 5 years, we see a similar pattern with 2005 being less. Go ahead, please. And again, as I mentioned before, validity relies on independent sources. When we obtain data from the state parks, we see the exact same pattern that you've seen before, 2005 being lower year. And for that reason, I'm recommending that we include July 3rd data in the recommended map. Go ahead, please. Now, let's look at the increase as we go 20%, moving from the data that includes July 3rd. You with me? Okay. So 20% increase here. We see minor change in areas that change classifications. Go to the next, please. Here we see another area that I believe went yellow, or I mean green. Go ahead. We would expect more areas to go red, right, because they increase density, build density, so some do. Go ahead, please. And that continues on to 80%. And finally, 100%. Go ahead, please. We see the condition that may be in the near term. I'm not sure. It depends on what kind of things happen at that lake. Okay? Go to the next map, please. Now, let's take a look at Lake Grand Bear here again. We see the situations of reporting the avoided, favored, and unsafe locations. Go ahead. And we see the kinds of accidents that are happening on that lake over the past 5 years. Go ahead. And then in terms of recommended map, again, for Lake Runway, we don't have a substantial data that said it was a low use year. We think it was, but since we don't, we'd rather provide a conservative approach and recommend the map that shows existing conditions without the July 3rd data. And let's project from that was 20%. Go ahead, please. I would share with you, out of curiosity, though, the July 3rd data does change it, but we're not recommending this map. Go ahead. In terms of projections, we see some changes occurring. Next slide. Okay, here minor at the 40. Go ahead. We see some change at the 60. Go ahead. And the 80. Go ahead. And the 100 as a possible future scenario. Go ahead, please. So I guess one of the questions we have for you in kind of concluding some of this is in doing these studies all around the country, and I've done them for Table Rock, Oakland, Bend, Missouri, I've done them from coast to coast, the same situation faces lakes. They're often at a crossroads in terms of development. When I worked for the people at the Corps of Engineers in Branson, Missouri for Table Rock Lake, they said, don't let Table Rock become like Lake of the Ozarks, okay, that is completely saturated. Because once you go in that direction, it's hard to come back. And so I've heard similar things from people here who use this lake and are concerned about the future conditions and the congestion. Okay? So I believe these lakes are both at a crossroads with respect to that, similar to many other lakes around the country. Go ahead. Go ahead, please. And so there's a few other things that I'm going to use here. I train managers and I teach students. You know, BLA is a multi-purpose organization whose principal products are new ideas coupled with the desire to share and apply those ideas throughout the company, enabling it to survive in a climate that's ever-changing. So, you know, just like with SLA, you're always trying to improve what you're doing and want to work toward being a world-class organization. And part of it is putting together sound science. Part of it is showing good leadership and using information to inform decisions. Go ahead. And so I went to the book on this and looked at the word lead and manage. And to lead means to travel, to guide. It's about a feel, a sense of movement. Leaders begin with a quest for new order. They venture into unexplored territory and guide us into new and unfamiliar destinations. But if you look at the contrast of that word, manage means to do something a bit different. At its core, managing is about organization and control. The critical difference is reflected in the meanings of these words, what it means to handle things and what it means to go places. And so you're part of a body of decision makers who are called upon to lead, and I think putting together good information like this helps you do that job easier. Go ahead, please. Now, how do we get there? Another very good book called Built to Last talks about product excellence, hard work, things that I see here with the staff, continuous self-improvement, honesty, and fairness. That's what we try to do with the workshops, respect, concern for the individual, and a drive for progress that arises from a deep urge to learn and explore. We're learning things here together. We're learning about the lake so we can manage it better. And highly visionary company displays a powerful mix of self-confidence with self-criticism. I've seen a lot of those good things here, and I'm sure that you've all contributed to that. Go ahead. So in terms of my conclusions, these recommended alternatives are supported by sound science. Yet, they only serve as a guide to be used with other information. Leadership is essential at this time in history to safeguard opportunities for these lakes. The solutions and implementation will rest on the efforts of agency cooperatives, public support, and the mix of enforcement, engineering, and education. And where do we go from here? Okay, we've completed the first three steps. We had a workshop to identify the issues. We conducted a study, which I shared with you, and there have been proposals out on the table. Those things are done. From here, there will be a public workshop. It will actually happen on February 11th and 13th at both Peak and Greenway, and then we'll reconvene for a record of decision held on March 6th and 7th with recommendations to the leadership from there. Thank you. Is there time for questions? Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Maybe you explain this, but how did you get 5 years of data if you weren't out there kind of taking, counting numbers of people on the lake?
Well, that data was provided to me from the staff at Passing Kingdom. Ken Hyde provided me that data, so I didn't collect that data personally. Those data were gathered, they're essentially head counts. If you want to add anything to that, Ken?
The data actually came from a count that we get from all the camps and all the things, all the marinas. We also do all the public use areas, all the ranges from the UPD count from that. So we actually count with all the data right here in this spreadsheet. So we actually physically count all those, and we basically kind of randomly sample for weekdays and weekend. And that's how we get the total and we average it out. That's how that came up with that data.
Go ahead, please.
Did you take into consideration, like when you get to your recommendations about obviously the marinas that are there and the developments are there, did you look at marinas that are permitted but not built and dry stack storage that's going to increase the area in particular parts of the lake in the future but just aren't there right now?
No, I think I put that in the category of other information. This essentially is a snapshot of building conditions and how people are using the lake and telling us what they feel, areas they like and don't like. And so that becomes a ground floor from which to add other layers of information like the ones you're mentioning and moving toward any kind of actions as I've outlined. Okay?
I've got a question. You've had a couple of meetings up there. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've done two workshops at each lake.
What were some of the comments, questions,
criticisms
that were offered by the public?
Sure. I think some of the people here were at some of those meetings. But I think part of it is we shared a proposed management items and we put them on the web for comment. Some of them they gave a little more charge and created some spin. One of them related to personal watercraft use. Apparently that industry found out about it and there were a number of emails and although in a place like Granbury, 40% of those accidents were really attributed to personal watercraft. So it's not an issue. It's truly an issue. However, much of the work to deal with PWCs should happen at the legislative level. When I worked at LCRA for Lake Travis, there were problems with personal watercraft and large boats, okay, called cigarette boats, okay. What we recommended there was not to really pick on them as individuals, but to focus on what they do, speed and sound. And I recommended there that the speed should be down to 45 miles an hour, and the decibel should be about 85, okay? So getting back to the workshop, we had a lot of public feeling about the personal watercraft, but if you push that aside, I think a number of other things came up related to this study, and it was more about curiosity of what this was about. So we decided to use that as a preliminary meeting and share what we were doing, and then conduct another workshop after people had a chance to look at these maps, the criteria, and then comment and solicit input from them at that point. And that's what we'll be doing on February 11th and 13th. Okay? There were 100 people at the Granbury workshop. I mean, a lot of people were there. It was a long session. I think by the time we were done, it was a very healthy session. I think some bonding occurred. I think some trust occurred. There was an active dialogue. And I think we showed that we were generally listening to the public and run their input. And on the spot, we decided to retool the process and have a second public workshop to solicit additional input based on recommendations from the people who are there. So we feel really good about this process. We feel that it is, in fact, transparent and open, and that we're engaged in a dialogue that is meaningful and useful, and that we're soliciting the kind of input at the level that it should be done.
Okay? I think the most pertinent comment that came out of the Granberry case was, how dare a left coast dwelling Yankee come down here and tell us what to do? How long did you spend defending your qualifications after that question?
I spent quite a bit of time, but I did mention that, I went to A&M. I did studies in Texas. My first son was born there, and I was going to say that my wife and I danced at the oldest dance hall in Green, Texas, and even with a long neck in my hip pocket, I didn't go that far. So I could have gone a little further with that comment, but I think by the time we were done, I think trust was created, quite frankly, and I've explained I'm a neutral player in this process. Integrity means a lot to me, and we're trying to do this the right way, lay the data out properly, and I stand by my credentials, and I stand by the quality of this work. Okay, so I think I think the situation kind of turned around there. I think we'll have a better rapport with the public in that area, but I think more work needs to be done, and we'll have to continue, and we'll all have to continue on that path to create, an open dialogue. Okay?
Do you generally follow the same format for each, like say you did the ones for the LCRA? Did you pretty much follow the same exact format, or do you tailor it to your clients?
No, I follow the same format. I think one thing that's happened in the past in Canada that is a bit unusual. If you think about the lakes I've done, for example, Lake Travis is near a city, it tends to get a lot of week-in and weekday use. Hudson Kingdom was more of a destination, and I found, and if I looked at the data carefully, they had more of a weekend use, but there's not a lot going on weekday, okay? So perhaps the criteria aren't as well suited for that, but I didn't want to abandon the criteria. I'd rather stick with the criteria and look for other sources of information, for example, the July 3rd data to include, and substantiate that with the fact that it was a low-use year, okay? So I'd rather not circumvent the criteria that we've established, and would rather look for other sources of information that would best explain what's really happening on that lake.
Are there any other questions?
I just had a question for the staff. How much do we allocate for this to spend on this study?
65.
Right. Because I've got an old October 12, 2004 agenda item which said 40,000, and then this one said approximately 70, so I was curious how much and where we are.
Well, what happened originally, we only considered, and then as a result of my briefing to y'all, the feedback from the board of directors was if it was good for the goose, it was good for the gander, and we wanted to take a look at Lake Granberry as well. So we added Lake Granberry into that mix.
Okay.
So the money is kind of all mixed together between Lake Granberry and Boston Kingdom. As a result of some of the changes that John mentioned, there has been a little bit of growth in that because we're holding the second public meeting. We wanted John to come down here and discuss this personally with y'all. So that added some cost to it that
was this in our budget, or was it money from something else? Where was this money allocated from?
It was placed in the budget.
Okay.
Any other questions?